Like to open the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. The order that we're going to proceed with today will be to take up public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 248 first, and then we'll move to a work session on Senate Bill 742 for purposes of adopting amendments. And then we will go to Senate Bill 246 and then Senate Bill 3. So, let me open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 248. We have some of the authors and people on the task force, Karen and Brenda, with some new research. Don Krodowski from Oak Ridge is here too. We have just a brief sort of update from you all. Thanks again for your work during the interim on this measure. Welcome, Don.
I'll be starting today. I'm Dr. Don Krodowski, Oak Ridge School District Superintendent. I've been asked today to present 5 years of quantitative and qualitative analysis on the full-day kindergarten in 5 minutes, so I'll keep it. First, a quick introduction. We're located in Lane County in the mountains. We've had a precipitous decline in enrollment. 1965, we had 1,500 kids. 1998, we had 961 kids. Today, we have about 550 kids. As those kids, the enrollment dropped, we had to do more with less with funding. 2006, 2007, we started looking at different things that we could do to make sure that we continued the stellar reputation that we have for academics in Oak Ridge. We looked at RTI, proficiency-based instruction. One of the things we looked at was all-day kindergarten. We were hesitant at first to adopt all-day kindergarten because, according to some reports, the gains drop off after the 3 years. We looked into it in depth and decided to adopt it. One of the unique things about our perspective on full-day kindergarten is that we have longitudinal information and data based on student achievement from half-day kindergarten to full-day kindergarten. That's what I'm going to share with you today. Hopefully this works.
Don, you adopted this in 2006?
We looked at it 2006, 2007, adopted it the next year, and we've been running it. The first group of full-day kindergarten kids are now in third grade.
Okay.
So we have data up through there.
Okay.
Well, it could be a very short presentation.
Well, I think you're... I appreciate you bringing this data to us now, since we've jumped the gun on you before, and this is pretty fresh. What's good about it is your findings, your experience is very recent, and it's Oregon. And while there's lots of data out there, it's good to have someone we know, someone in the family, tell us how this works.
What we know is that I may not be able to get this up, and the visual is very important. You have the packets in front of you, I believe. They're a blue packet. If you look at the first page, you'll notice that we looked at different measures. We looked at both qualitative and quantitative analysis of the introduction of full-day kindergarten versus half-day kindergarten. We looked at Dibble's testing, which is a reading analysis or assessment of kindergarten through grade two or so. We had teacher interviews, parent surveys, and then what we did what's called developmentally appropriate practices assessments. When you look at the actual data coming out of kindergarten, it's mind-boggling the improvement in academic achievement that occurs for five-year-olds when they attend full-day versus half-day kindergarten, especially in the area of reading. If you look at the third slide that looks like this one here, you'll notice that the improvement is very significant, specifically in the areas of reading. When you look at this here, you'll see that the half day is on the first line, full day second line, and full day in 08-09 on the third line. And there's linear growth across the spectrum on those. What's neat about this is since we had half-day kindergarten and then followed by full-day kindergarten, we had a graduate student collect data and research this the whole time. So we turned it into a longitudinal study to track whether or not these gains were maintained into the higher grade levels. And what we found was that they were. When you look at the gains in first grade, when you look at half-day kindergarten versus full-day kindergarten, the gains are statistically significant. When you look at the next slide that looks like the cones, this is to demonstrate that this isn't a result of having higher achieving kids enter kindergarten. The achievement level for the kids is basically the same for each year on full-day kindergarten. And this is, if I could get you to look at anything today and consider something, is this. This shows, and it's titled First Grade Fall ORF by Instructional Recommendation. That's oral reading fluency, how well a student reads. When you look at this, we have the half-day kindergarten, full-day kindergarten in the first year, and full-day kindergarten in the second year in first grade. And what you'll notice is that the red on the top of the cone, those are children that require intensive intervention. Well, what happened from the half-day kindergarten to the full-day kindergarten was that the green moved up, which means that they're at level. The yellow moved up, and intensive intervention strategies required for first graders following full-day kindergarten basically did not exist anymore.
And there's a cost to that intervention?
Oh, yeah. What we did is, it's interesting because we've had this decline in enrollment, so we've had to make cuts, just like everyone. And what we decided to do was use title funds to fund that. This year, as we're going through the budget process, we're looking at reducing our teaching staff by 10%. Our teachers said, you know what, we had them all come together, and they would rather cut other things than all-day kindergarten. There were teachers that literally voted to lose their jobs so that we could keep all-day kindergarten in Oak Ridge. The teachers see the significance of this, as well as the parents and the community. Oh, got it now? How do I make it go down? The arrow's not working.
Hit space bar.
Space bar?
Nope.
Swell. All right, this will take it down. Okay, so I'm going to show this one again real quick so everybody can see this. This is where the kids came into kindergarten in Oak Ridge. Basically, the red indicates intensive interventions needed to get them to grade level at kindergarten. Those were all 3 years of full-day kindergarten. This shows first grade results from all-day kindergarten, the red being intensive, yellow being strategic, and green meaning at grade level. The final one here is for second grade, so it carries on into 3 grade levels. The impact of all-day kindergarten is significant. So I have a lot more data, but I promise to keep this to 5 minutes, and I'm at my time. If you would like to see that data, let me know by contacting me through the Oak Ridge School District.
Well, I very much appreciate that update, and thank you for driving. Senator Shields.
Thank you, Chair. What is the N in the study? How many kids were we talking about?
We have approximately 50 children in each grade level.
Okay, so 50 in each. Okay.
So over the 4 years now, we're looking at about 200 kids.
Okay.
Questions? Brenda, you're from a larger school district.
I'm Brenda Lewis from the Beaverton School District. I have some short remarks here just to reiterate the support for Senate Bill 248. In order to ensure that all students are college and career ready, we must ensure that enough time is provided for our students to master content learning standards at each grade level, including kindergarten. New high school diploma standards, as well as the increases in the OAKS cut scores for reading and math, require that we look at key resources to support student learning. As of this year in Oregon, we have 14,650 students in full-day kindergarten programs. Districts are putting general fund dollars toward kindergarten because they are seeing a positive impact on student achievement. Research indicates that kindergarten through second grade years are a critical time for learning. Students who leave second grade not meeting reading benchmarks are at high risk for dropping out of school. Title I and Title III federal program grant dollars may be supplementally used to support early learners programs such as kindergarten and pre-kindergarten, and also extending the kindergarten day so that students can achieve the grade level standards, as well as elementary and secondary act requirements for AMAOs as part of the criteria for the federal funding. We cannot supplant the use of Title I federal dollars to provide for general education needs of our students. While individual schools may opt to use their Title I dollars to support extended day kindergarten, the impact will be on grades 1 through 5 having less resources to supplement reading, writing, and math instruction. By providing these dollars for extended day kindergarten programs, There are reductions in other Title I requirements, such as extended day or extended year programs, professional development, and parent involvement. I contacted my colleague in Portland Public Schools. She, Susan Cosmala, is the director of the Title I programs, to see what kind of impact they have on their full-day kindergarten program, which they do provide in Portland. Portland Public Schools received $17 million in Title I funds this year. That was their allocation. Their district set aside $4 to $4.5 million to support full-day kindergarten in their Title I schools, and they have 47 Title I schools in Portland. They also set aside $1 million for some pre-K programs in Portland. What happened is that this is reducing each Title I school's ability to fund the extended day, extended year programs, as well as supporting first through fifth grade students who have needs in reading, writing, and math for supplemental instruction. Also, with the ARRA funds ending this year, Portland schools stand to lose an additional 50% of their Title I dollars supporting full-day kindergarten and even fewer supplemental supports for first through fifth grade. So Beaverton and Portland schools absolutely do support the full-day kindergarten proposal outlined in Senate Bill 248, and we would love for this to become a reality for every school in Oregon. And I would also request respectfully that you please address the sunsetting of Senate Bill 44, which allows for school districts to have the option to have tuition-based full-day kindergarten. We would like to see that addressed as quickly as possible since we are gearing up for next year's enrollment. Thank you.
Thank you. Karen.
I'm Karen Twain, an administrator in Tigard Tualatin School District. I've been an elementary principal for 11 years. And I'm going to sort of back clean up here, if you will. It's now time for us to move ahead in the state of Oregon with full-day kindergarten. This has been an idea that has been tried, proven, and now needed for at least 20 years. It is no longer a question of if we should have full-day kindergarten. But the real question is, when will we move forward with the only initiative that has 100% proven results in achievement? I can tell you as a building principal, full-day kindergarten is the program that has made the biggest difference in closing the achievement gap. Compared to half-day programs, students in full-day kindergarten receive approximately 15,480 minutes more of reading and 10,320 minutes more of math, and there is significantly more time for science and social studies. I was the chair of the full-day kindergarten implementation committee in the state. We explored the worthiness of full-day kindergarten and then looked at ways to implement the idea. Every option had its pros and cons, but we landed on our current proposal. It's one that would bring free full-day kindergarten to every student. No longer will families have to worry if they can afford a part of their child's education. We have set out a 5-year timeline for implementation with the idea that districts can begin their work immediately. The last few months, I've been part of a committee in the Tigard-Tualatin School District called S3, or Smart Sustainable Schools. We were asked to come up with ideas for budget cutbacks, as well as ways to begin or sustain programs that were of the highest priority. The committee had representation from the community, parents, certified and classified staff, school board, and administrators. The top K-12 priority that came from this committee was full-day kindergarten. I was amazed that when faced with our current financial picture, a group of folks saw full-day kindergarten as the smart thing to do. I believe that after a year and a half of work on this committee, we're at a crossroads in terms of moving forward. The only way that I can think to emphasize my point is to tell you about a conversation I had with my 10-year-old son yesterday. I was explaining the bill on full-day kindergarten to him, and he asked several questions as to why this was important. After thinking back on his half-day kindergarten experience, he said that it would have been a good idea for him to have had 6 hours rather than 2.5 at school. He then asked me if he could help and said he was ready to start this weekend. So I want to capture my son's enthusiasm and pass it on to you. I'm asking you to pass this bill so that the educators can start doing what they do best, thinking in creative ways to do what's best for kids. I cannot say how much I have appreciated your time spent on this over the years, and I hope that we can start to move forward with this critical initiative. So thank you so much.
Karen, thank you. We appreciate very much the work that the implementation mm-hmm. committee did. Questions, comments? Why don't you stand by there in case we have some more.
Okay.
Senator Morris, we don't have any amendments on this bill.
We
are in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 240 8 to the floor with a two-pass recommendation and a recommendation that the Senate President rescind the referral to Ways and Means.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 248 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and a recommendation that the Senate President rescind referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Well, I just want to say that this has been a long time coming. I know we can't do this immediately, but I think the committee pragmatically looked at the options where we are in our economy versus the need to do this. It includes the technical change that we need to keep doing the half-day tuition until this is ready to go. I think you're right. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. The research from Don Kordosky just, you know, reinforces what I think all of us knew from other national data and intuitively and what we've seen in our schools. So, again, very much appreciative of your efforts. Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make a comment. First of all, I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for the work that you've put into this issue. I know you've been working on it for a very long time, and I am absolutely convinced that this is good policy and will be supporting the bill today. I just want to mention that one of the things I want to keep an eye on is the funding issue for our K-12 education, because without additional funding, funding full-day kindergarten means that grades 1 through 12 will get less. And I'm convinced that this is still the right policy, but I'm concerned because I hear from my constituents that the classes are already too large and that the school year is already too short and that too many cuts have already been made. So I'm going to be really careful, Mr. Chair, as I know you will, about keeping an eye on that and looking at the implementation date and hoping that by the time this is implemented, we will have enough in our budget so that we can add to our K-12 budget to make up that difference. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and we should add that hopefully with the passage of your bill, Senate Bill 800, which will hopefully cut fees and costs to the system, with the passage hopefully of an ESD reform bill, that we can cut costs and make room for the things that actually do work. So, Senator Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel before we go into the vote, I should explain where I'm heading. I do have concerns about this. I support the policy as well, but I would feel much more comfortable with this bill going to Ways and Means or working to have some kind of funding mechanism for the bill. So I will be respectfully voting no.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, those of the opinion that Senate Bill 248 should be moved to the floor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
No.
Vice Chair Morris?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Senator Cruz and I will carry this bill. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 248. Okay. Is there anything else before us today? Oh, okay. I do want to make an announcement on Senate Bill 742. There are people here who have signed up who support this bill, and there are people here I know who oppose it. The time does not allow us to have spoken testimony today. We are taking written testimony from just about everyone that has turned it in. I think we've got everyone who has also signed up on these sheets. So we're going into a work session on Senate Bill 742. And I do want to open up a work session on 742. If you could quickly give us the summary, Linda, and the amendments.
Okay. Senate Bill 742 provides that certain students are entitled to exemption from non-resident tuition and fees at state institutions of higher education. It allows for a direct review of challenges to the law by the Oregon Supreme Court. We have two amendments. And Senate Bill 742-2 amendment states that the student showing intent to become a citizen or lawful permanent resident by filing an affidavit with the school stating that the student has filed an application or will file an application to legalize the student's immigration status. The second amendment, which is Senate Bill 742-3 requires the student to have lived in the country for 5 years with 3 years immediately prior in Oregon in order to be exempt from non-resident tuition.
Okay, we're in a work session. Senator Morris, did you want to speak to either of these amendments?
Well, Mr. Chair, I support both of the amendments. I think we improved the major.
Okay. Senator Bonamici?
No, I don't wish to speak. Thank you.
Okay. One quick announcement. The State Board of Higher Education last week voted to support this legislation, and we have their letter of support in our packet. Morgan Anderson of Intel, on behalf of the Oregon Business Association, also has provided written testimony in support of Senate Bill 742. Senator Morris.
Mr. Chair, I move the Nash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 742, dated 3-8-11.
Mm-hmm. Senator Morris moves to adopt the Nash 2 amendments to Senate 42. Dated March 14th, 2011. Any discussion?
Sorry. The Dash 2s are dated March 8th.
Thank you. Correction. That is March
8th. Senator Morris moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated March 8th, 2011 to Senate Bill 742. Any discussion? Seeing none, the Dash 2s are amended.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 742, dated March 14th.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendment dated March 14th to Senate Bill 742. Is there any discussion on that amendment? Seeing none, the Dash 3s are adopted.
Are you ready?
All right.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 742 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 742 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I think that, that this is obviously a very hot, heated debate statewide. I was compelled to believe that there is definitely a justice issue here. I think that the people who bring up the fact that these kids are brought here with absolutely no say absolutely have an argument that these kids have come here, we've invested in them, and that we are in a situation where we've already put some investment in them, and we, if they want to go to higher education, these are exactly the kind of people that we want to have become American citizens. On the other hand, in this environment, I think that there's no doubt that we are short on money in this building. And I think this is one of those situations where people can argue to me that it costs nothing more to have somebody else come into the process, but I'm having a hard time accepting some of the arguments about the money. My district in particular is very, very much adamantly opposed to this because of the perception that it looks that we're cutting our school days. We can't fund full-day kindergarten. We can't fund schools at a level that people view as being right and just. And then we're passing something that is going to put additional burden on the higher ed system. I think this is an issue that is no doubt that if of all the immigration issues is probably the one where the justice argument absolutely comes out the most. And I've talked to both proponents and the opponents of the bill, and I think we all agree this is a really, really difficult issue on how to deal with these kids, many of them who perceive themselves as being raised in the United States their entire lives and to see themselves as Americans. But in this particular environment with this budget situation, I'm having a really hard time justifying to my constituents that we're going to vote to give in-state tuition to somebody who still is not an in-state resident. I can see somebody who two parents live in Vancouver, both work in Oregon, come across the bridge every day, pay Oregon taxes, and their child still wouldn't get in-state tuition. And those types of anomalies, those types of situations also add to this justice argument. At this point, until I could see how this does absolutely cost the taxpayers nothing, I don't think I can support it. However, I want to say to the advocates for the bill, I think this is one of those issues that clearly the justice argument is absolutely front and center. These kids are victims of a very, very bad federal policy. And somehow, we're going to have to change that federal policy with pressure from all of us on all sides of this issue. So I'll be respectfully voting no. However, I want to make sure that folks realize that I thought the arguments in favor of the bill were very compelling.
Thank you. Senator Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm proud to be supporting this bill, but I wanted to also get some comments with particularly those who were on both sides of the issue, that what I sensed in a lot of the testimony was frustration with where the United States economy is going right now. And I think that as we, in the last 2 years, as we've entered this Great Depression, we've realized that for the last 10-plus years, we've been living on a real estate finance and housing bubble. And when that housing bubble and the real estate bubble and the finance bubble burst, we woke up to the fact that we've shipped most of our jobs overseas. And the one thing that was pretty compelling to me was that whether it was Ramon Ramirez from Pecun or Jim Ludwig from Oregonians for Immigration Reform, is that there was common ground on the notion of we need to get at the issue of why people are coming to this country in the first place, and it's and why we as a society are feeling that kind of stress, because our jobs are going overseas and because people can't make a living in agriculture in their home countries. And so I think that we need to send a message to Congress that we need to adjust our trade policy, and I think that's something that most of the people in this room can find some common ground on. And but I do believe that, you know, when someone comes from the Ukraine and they bring along their 6-month-old son or daughter, that's not a willing participant in that decision. Or if they're coming from Guatemala, the same thing. And it makes sense to me that if we have invested this amount of money into their education, that we should see them be able to succeed in college. And, you know, their immigration status could change, and they could become citizens and be very, very productive in a whole variety of ways. And I think this bill will allow a limited number of kids to do so, and I'll be very proud to be supportive.
Thank you. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I recognize how contentious this issue is. But when you have these children that have the opportunity to serve the U.S. military and give their lives for this country as an illegal immigrant, could we do less to give them an opportunity to improve our country by improving their lives? The military requires a path to citizenship. This bill also requires a path to citizenship. These children entered this country at the hands of their parents who committed an illegal act. But I cannot ascribe the responsibility for that illegal act to these children who came into this country. I just don't see that connection. For me, it's an issue of what will make Oregon a better place, what will make our nation a better place. And to take a segment of our population, granted it's very small, of these youth that would be entering college or in our universities, to ascribe to them a lesser place in society by virtue of the economics of paying a tuition, out-of-state tuition, I don't think is in the best interest of our state. And for that reason, Mr. Chairman and colleagues, I am supporting this bill.
Thank you. Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with all of the comments that have been said by my colleagues. Where I differ from my good friend, Senator George, is that, yes, I'm also concerned about the cuts to our schools. As I mentioned in the prior bill, class sizes budgetary concerns. Where I see the difference is that these students, potential students, who have been educated in our K-12 system, if they have to pay in-state tuition, they won't go to college, and they'll have lower-paying jobs if they can find jobs. If they can get the in-state tuition, they are residents. They aren't getting something that any other resident isn't getting. If they pay in-state tuition, they'll be able to further their education and help rebuild our economy. And that lost potential, if they don't go to school, is something that I don't think this state should further in terms of policy. So that's where we differ in terms of, yes, being concerned about the economy and the budget, but these are not students who can go to school if they have to pay in-state tuition. So I think we're increasing the potential of these students, and I think that they'll be contributing to our society and to our economy. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, committee. Those of the opinion that Senate Bill 742 as amended should be moved to the floor will say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator George?
No.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Morse?
Aye.
Chair Hatch?
Aye. The motion passes. Senator Morse, will you carry this bill?
Yes, I will. Thank you.
And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 742, and we'll stand at ease for 2 minutes. 248, which is the companion bill to 248, part of the recommendation. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 246. Linda?
Senate Bill 246 requires children 5 or 6 years of age who are enrolled in public school to maintain regular attendance at public school during the entire school term. It requires every person who elects to enroll a child of 5 or 6 in public school to maintain the child's regular attendance during the entire school term.
We do have a dash one amendment.
Okay, give us the amendment.
The dash one amendment to Senate Bill 246 removes the phrase during the entire school year in sections 1 and section 2 and replaces it with the language that says while the child is enrolled in the public school.
Thank you. Karen and Brandon, you want to come up quickly, or one of you, or both? This was part of your recommendation, and it got set outside this in a separate bill, but just tell us what the thinking was here.
Just real quickly, it was part of our bill initially because if full-day kindergarten comes into being, we want to make sure that when the kids show up, they're there. And so it's not something we're trying. They're there half the time, and maybe it works or maybe it doesn't. And as a building principal, I can tell you I ran into conflicts all the time when we had students who were, let's say, in third grade from the same family and a kindergartner, and we go to their house and say, you know, your third grader needs to come, but it's okay if your kindergartner stays at home. It just didn't make sense. So what we know is kids, in order to learn, they have to be there. So this gives families the option, if they don't want to enroll their child in kindergarten or first grade, that's fine. But once they do enroll them, we're asking that they commit to being there.
And I think, too, as taxpayers, you know, we are supporting half-day kindergarten programs across
Brenda, your
the
name
state.
For the record.
Brenda Lewis, Beaverton School District. We're supporting half-day kindergarten, and upon enrollment, if the parent sees fit to enroll their child in public schools when they're 5 years of age, I feel like that students should be required to attend. I mean, our tax dollars are going to support a half-day program. Certainly, we want children to be there who are enrolled. It by no means takes away parents' choice or option to not send their, if they feel like their five-year-old is not ready for kindergarten, they certainly can hold that child out of school for another year and they can start late. But upon enrollment, we feel like a parent should be invested in their child's education if they make that commitment to assure that they have daily attendance.
Okay. Senator Shields?
Mr. Chair, I heard from the High School Slacker Association, and they were very pleased that you wrote them out of this bill.
Yeah. Okay.
A question.
Senator.
If a parent enrolls the child, and then the child is just not adapting, and the conclusion is that it would be better to be homeschooled, what would happen in that circumstance?
At any time, a parent could withdraw their child from school. They can do that currently, K through 12, and that would not change.
Okay, thank you very much for putting that on the record. That was a question that had been raised to me.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we're in a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 246, dated 2-10-11.
Senator Morris moves the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 246, dated March 10th, 11. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, the dash one amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 246 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 246 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
None that matters.
Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. 246 goes to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Senator George, would you carry this? Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 246. And moving forward, we will open up a public hearing and a possible work session on Senate Bill 3. Linda?
Senate Bill 3 modifies terminology in education statutes from mental retardation to intelligence disability. It requires individualized education programs to use the new terminology. Declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay. This is Senator Courtney's bill. We have written testimony from him. We also have with us Lana Traynor and Libby Crawford, the mother of Katie.
Lana's not here today.
Okay.
My notes here. Chairman Hatch, Vice Chair Morris, Senator Shields, Senator George, thank you so much for having us here today and allowing me to testify on behalf of LC3, which I affectionately call Katie's bill. This is my daughter, Katie Crawford, the inspiration of the bill. Sorry, I'll get emotional. On behalf of my daughter, Katie, and myself, we'd like to also extend our gratitude to Senator Peter Courtney and Senator Edwards for their support of this bill, which I told you I affectionately call Katie's bill. In 2002, we were told that Kate could no longer attend the private Christian school because they did not have the resources to educate her. But we had the option of going across the street to the public school, for they had resources available to them. We made the appointment, put Katie at first grade through hours of testing. At our test review appointment, we were told that they could educate Katie if we would be willing to label her mentally retarded. They told us there wasn't any other placement for her because she didn't fit the bill of their criteria. She was too high in her social scores, but her IQ was low. They said not to worry about the label. And they also said that way she'll get SSI. Still in shock that they would even use that language, mentally retarded, to describe a child anymore. In this day and age, my husband and I opted for no, for the label. By not accepting the label, we were then not able to put our daughter on an individual education plan, which they call an IEP. Because she didn't have a label, nor did she fit any other category within their system of placement, we would then have to put her into mainstream with no assistance. My daughter was deaf until she was almost five and needed the extra help to catch her up, so we were left with no alternative but to find some sort of private education for our daughter. We had to homeschool her for the rest of the year and found a school for her that following year that had children that wore cochlear implants, but they integrated hearing children so that they could all work together. It was a great school for Katie, and she thrived there until fourth grade. When we went to the first day of fourth grade, they cut their funding from fourth through eighth grades. And so we were left scrambling trying to find a school for her at the last minute. So we had no other choice but to make that tough decision to go back into the public school system. Again, she was tested, again with the mentally retarded label, but the only difference this time is that we didn't have any other options for our daughter. We accepted the label, and she was now in the system as mentally retarded against our better judgment. Fortunately, she was with an amazing teacher who kept her in his classroom for the 2 years she was at the elementary school. The shock and heartbreak came to our family when Katie had to move to junior high. We selected a junior high that was highly recommended by our caseworker from the elementary school, who recommended a life skills class for Katie. She said it was self-contained and very proactive in working with their IEP. Again, we're new to this process and really didn't understand what all that meant. It was presented to us that this teacher was amazing and children thrived in his classroom. We received all the information about junior high. Katie was very excited. And I took her the first day of school to assist her in her locker and to help her find, you know, where her classes were. It was a new environment. Junior high is a pretty big deal for sixth graders. And when I walked into that classroom, Life Skills wasn't there to help Katie. It was there to contain Katie and all other children like Katie. It wasn't to help her blossom. It was a daycare. It was the wrong class for Katie, and I spent the whole year fighting to get her in some regular ed classes. Instead, their idea of social in her IEP or being with regular ed students had her in the cafeteria separating forks, knives, and spoons. It had her in the cafeteria to integrate her with mainstream regular ed children, cleaning the tables after regular ed students had lunch. My heart dropped for every single child in that classroom that had the ability to do more, but were not given the opportunity because of this label. We fought for a year to get her what she needed. All the while, they tested her for a year without our consent to keep her where she was, to prove to us that mental retardation, that she was mentally retarded and that her placement is where she needed to be in that school. It's hard for me to say those two words because they come with such a stigma. It's not my daughter or anyone else's child. The word mentally retarded is no business in our educational system when describing these precious children. As a parent, it is hard enough to know that your child's ability is not up to speed with their peers, but to have the label, to label your child with such language like this was devastating to us. We have to keep this label for our daughter until recently. Well, we have kept this label from our daughter until recently when we decided to go ahead with this process and this bill. We kept it from her because it really wasn't anything she needed to know. My daughter is now in mainstream classrooms in high school, and she does have modifications, and she's in two classes a day that address her extra help and her needs in math and reading. My daughter is social, participates in after-school activities, and she can walk home alone, yet the label still follows her today and is an inaccurate assessment of her delay. It sends the message that this child has limited capacity to learn. My family is lucky that we have the means to fight this fight and feel it has been our duty to fight for all families that have to make this choice to label their child. This label follows them for life. Therefore, we feel a change in language has always been what is needed to truly identify where the struggle lies for these children. The term celebutard was the title of a book and used frequently by a radio talk show host for, "That is so retarded," you hear people say when talking about things. It's used so frequently in our society. This referral insinuates being stupid, unintelligent, and dumb, none of which describes my daughter or any other child with her disability. I come to you today for ask for your help to do away with such language in our educational system and change mentally retarded to intellectual disability when placing a child in their IEP. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and your family is lucky, I think. Kate is lucky to have an advocate like you for
Thank you.
A mother. Questions? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Krista Nichols, Judy Pernillo, and Marcy England.
First of all, I want to say thank you. It's an honor. It's the first time for me. Dear Haas and members of the community, I am Kristen Nichols from Lincoln City, Oregon. I am on the board of directors of Self-Advocates as Leaders. So, I am also a vice chair of the Public Policy Committee for SAL. Oh, sorry. Okay. I am I am also vice chair of the policy committee for SHEL. SHEL is an organization of people with social and mental disabilities. We are interested in training strong leaders who will become equal partners in making policy and law that will affect the lives of people with social and mental disabilities in Oregon. So we suppose Senate Bill 3, which will take out the laws mental retardation from education, laws and programs to raise intellectual disabilities will be used instead. The members of SHEL think this bill is very important. When I was in school, I was there to learn about what people call me names. This made me feel upset and hurt. They call me retarded and call me a retard. The word retarded made me feel small and made me feel uncomfortable with myself. It made me feel like I wanted to go hide somewhere. For this ugly word to be used by schools to talk about students with disabilities, this isn't right. This is disrespectful to people with hearing problems. Some people don't think the word retarded is a bad word. But people with disabilities, like me, do think it's a bad word. I know the word retarded. Oh, sorry. Thank you. Retarded. It's a bad word. But people with disabilities, like me, do think it is a bad word. I know the word retarded isn't meant to be a harsh word. But some people use it to hurt people like me. I hope you will pass Senate Bill 3 so the word retarded is out for good. The word intellectual disability do not hurt. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about Senate Bill 3. If you have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Haas.
Who would like to go next?
Chair Haas and members of the committee.
My
name is Judy Cuneo. And I'm the self-advocacy coordinator. For the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities. If you have my written testimony. You won't see any of the names. Or the words. Because they're not important. Why use them? I want to talk to you about why. Why Senate Bill 3 is so important. Why I urge you to give it your support. Words do matter. A lot more than people realize. As a person with a disability, I know firsthand the damage that words can do. They can stay with you the rest of your life. I consider myself pretty successful.
Yeah.
Now?
But I still go back to...
To all the names. And all the put-downs. That was given to me.
Many years.
For many years. Everyone, no matter who they are, deserves and needs the same respect. But many of the words. That are used to describe people with disabilities are anything but respectful. He can be very bad in school. If you are on the receiving end of it. I'm sorry. It can have many long-lasting effects, such as low self-esteem, lack of confidence, and even feel like they are worthless. I urge you to give all kids a positive outlook about themselves. Words do hurt. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy.
Good afternoon. Chair Hass and members of the committee. My name is Marcy Engledew, and I'm the Executive Director of the Arc of Oregon. We are a nonprofit, and we are organized, have been organized since 1954 to advocate and provide services for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. I appreciate the opportunity to address the Senate Education and Workforce Development Committee and to voice our support for Senate Bill 3. Almost 60 years ago, the ARC became the voice for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. With no services to keep families together, a family's only option was institutionalization for their child, and in Oregon, that meant Fairview, the state institution for the feeble-minded, as the sign was posted. For years, the terms such as feeble-minded, imbecile, mongoloid, and retarded were common. In fact, when the ARC was established in 1954, our organization was named the Association for Retarded Children. And in the 70s, when our children grew up and became adults, the name was changed to the Association for Retarded Citizens. The acronym, the ARC, which was capital A, capital R, capital C, and was the name that we went by, and people referred to us as the ARC. For years, thanks to self-advocates and families voicing their opinion of opposition to the ARC about the continued term of the use retarded in our name and our taglines, the ARC of Oregon and the ARC nationally and our local chapters began to address this situation. 1991, in Portland, the ARC held its national convention and voted to impose the third and final name change to the ARC. We no longer represent an acronym using the word retarded. Today, the ARC's more than 700 affiliated chapters nationwide are embracing, determined, and experienced in promoting and protecting rights for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Collectively, our chapters across a variety provide a variety of needed services and supports across the United States. We are the ARC across the lifetime and across the diagnoses such as Down syndrome, autism, and other intellectual and developmental disabilities. Although I'm a staff member for the ARC, I'm also a parent of a young gentleman named Joe who experiences Down syndrome, who is 19. He was born in 1991. When the ARC dropped the term retarded from their name. As a young parent, I was stigmatized by the term mental retardation and felt some relief when talking about my son's disability by only using the term Down syndrome and never mentioning mental retardation. Throughout Joey's education, the three-year eligibility process was always a sad reminder that my son's primary eligibility label would be mental retardation. As a staff member, I've seen families hurt and gone through the pain that when their son or daughter has been through the assessment process and the family hears the school psychologist confirm eligibility for special education with the label of mental retardation. We take numerous calls at the ARC of Oregon hearing families complain that the school has labeled their student retarded. For over 30 years, we have been addressing the negativity of the term retarded. Most recently, on October 8, 2010, President Obama signed Rose's Law that substitutes the term intellectual disabilities for mental retardation in many federal laws. Self-advocates and the ARC were instrumental in the passage of Rose's Law. Just as the adoption of People First language by the federal government encourages the general public to follow suit and is a major step forward in changing attitudes so that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities are fully included, it is imperative that the Oregon Senate Education and Workforce Development Committee support the passage of Senate Bill 3 so that students and families found eligible for special education services receive the dignity they so deserve as they navigate an arduous and difficult special education service system. Senate Bill 3 will preserve that dignity and help students and families develop an IEP that promotes success without the negativity of the term mental retardation. Thank you for this opportunity to provide testimony.
Questions or comments?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bob, Juliet.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Junduff. I'm the Director of Disability Rights Oregon. I'm here speaking in support of Senate Bill 3. First of all, I'd like to thank Senator Courtney for bringing this important bill forward for your attention. My remarks will be brief. I watched the other witnesses and said to myself, you know, at least I'm not going to cry when I get up there, but I got to tell you that It did bring a tear to my eye listening, because in our work, which is defending the rights of people with disabilities in Oregon, there's nothing more upsetting and touching than when you see an individual who is being disrespected through the use of terminology. We progressed quite a bit over the years, as you know, in terms of learning the lessons of treating all Oregonians, all citizens, as being equal participants in our society. In the preamble to the Americans with Disabilities Act, it notes that disability is a natural part of life, and that many a fair percentage of our citizens, certainly of our family members, are people with disabilities and deserve the respect and dignity that other citizens have. I am an attorney. I did a very quick look at our Oregon statutes, and I noted that we still have 74 statutes in Oregon that refer to this population of people as either mentally retarded or retarded. And Senate Bill 3 is a very important step in moving forward and making sure that in the laws that are the compact in our society, that we're not being disrespectful to an important group that has much to offer us. So with that said, I'd like to finish by just adding our support for this bill and hope that you pass it.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it. Hold on. I don't think you're going to find... Hey, Bob?
Oh, sorry.
You won't find any argument up here, I don't think, but remind us of the nuance between developmental disability and intellectual disability and how the law should treat that phrase, because I think that's in our statutes, too.
Mr. Chair, back 6 years ago now, we did pass a law in Oregon called the Respectful Language Bill. And what it set out to do was to start a process by which we can start changing some of the terminology used to refer to people with disabilities. Now, you notice that I just used the phrase people with disabilities. And that gets to the core of what that bill is trying to do. Many times a person will be referred to and was in our laws and administrative rules as disabled. And what people first language strives to do is to note that people are people, and each person should have the same dignity and rights as other people. When we use terms to distinguish people or to shunt them off into groups, we start to treat them as somewhat different than regular folks. So this is an effort to... The use of that terminology is an effort to try to acknowledge that all people are people. We all have different characteristics. Many of us have disabilities. Many of us have things that aren't common to the rest of the population, but at the end of the day, we are all people. And so that was a step in distinguishing the term disability from people disabled, from people with disabilities. This bill addresses something a little bit differently, has to do with a finer set of folks with disabilities. And as you heard earlier, we've had a variety of terms that have been used to label this group of folks. Each one of them has carried a negative pejorative association. And what we're trying to do in this bill is just to say, yes, you know, sometimes in our laws, sometimes in our work, we have to distinguish groups. But when we do so, let's do it in a way that is not a common schoolyard insult.
Okay. Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Morris?
Well, thank you for your testimony. I'm curious and I don't have my computers off here. The related clause to this bill, is it sufficiently broad to clean up in an omnibus cleanup of the language that you referenced, that you discovered in myriad other statutes?
Relating clause is relating to persons with intellectual disability. There is, if I remember, Section 5 says, for purposes of harmonizing and clarifying statutory law, the Legislative Council may substitute for words designating retardation or mental retardation wherever they occur in our chapters, other words designating intellectual disability. So, correct me if I'm wrong, Linda, but the way I read that is, as they go through these statutes, and we see this all the time and when lexicon evolves, that they will replace that.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, Some of the terminology, it gets a little tricky because it has to be conformed with federal laws and so forth. And so we have to be careful just to make sure that we're not inadvertently screwing up some of the relationships between our federal laws and our state laws.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we are in our work session on Senate Bill 3.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 3 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 3 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? No discussion. Is there objection? No objection. The motion is passed. Senate Bill 3 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Courtney will be the carrier. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 3. And wanted to note also, in case there was a doubt, that the Department of Education is clearly on board in support. We have their letter of support up here with us. Senate Bill 3, Katie's Law, patterned after Rose's Law, going to the Senate floor. Thank you all. Thank you, committee. We are adjourned.